This is continuing coverage of the trial of Karen Reed from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll be addressing this with the court's permission. This is number, just so we keep it clear in my head, I had named this number 17, dealing with the retrograde extrapolation.
Okay, we don't have it as 17 anywhere.
I thought that was the list that the helpful list that the Commonwealth...
Oh, okay, our number is 289.
Right, okay, so...
And the Commonwealth's one paragraph response is 17, but you filed the motion, so why don't we hear from you as the moving party?
Thank you. So the Commonwealth wishes to have Ms. Reed's retrograde extrapolation records admitted over, naturally, a hearsay objection, because the Commonwealth, their position is that they are medical records. The Commonwealth misapprehends the definition, the base definition of what a medical record is. A medical record, as the court well knows, holds a very special place in the evidence code, and that's because it's not compiled in anticipation of litigation. And for that reason and that reason only, they're deemed non-testimonial and not subject to Crawford and the defendant's right to confront and cross-examine witnesses or the experts behind the reports. Medical records are different than what we have here. The extrapolation records we have here are not medical records that were generated for treatment or Ms. Reed's medical history. They're the opposite. Those records were generated specifically in anticipation of litigation and in association with this criminal investigation. Thus, they are rank hearsay. The Commonwealth claims that the records are not produced in anticipation of litigation, stating basically that during her hospitalization, law enforcement was at the, quote, beginning stages of their investigation. But what the Commonwealth fails to mention or address is that at approximately 6:30 a.m. on a dash cam video, an officer, Officer Good, as a matter of fact, a Canton police officer, states to Detective Lank that he is going to, quote unquote, section her, which the court knows what that phrase means. He's going to place a hold on her medically. Thus, the clear intent of law enforcement hours before the blood draw was actually taken was to keep her under law enforcement's thumb as she was an immediate suspect. But there's a bigger issue, Your Honor, and that is that the parties lack the essential, both, and by the way, this goes to the Commonwealth as well, the Commonwealth, but more importantly, the defense, we all lack the essential information on how the blood was actually drawn and tested. Those standardized protocols that we all get used to in the average OUI case, drunk driving case, they don't exist here. The standardized protocols for reliable testing, they're tried and true, and every one of those protocols is missing, or are missing, and that leaves the defense having to sort of guess at the validity of the underlying test, and the validity of the underlying test is the foundation on which the extrapolation is made, which is the only thing the Commonwealth really cares about. They don't care about the underlying test, they care about extrapolating backward several hours. But that this sort of goes along the theme of garbage in, garbage out. If the underlying test was not valid, or it can't be proven to be valid, then, of course, the extrapolation is also invalid. The question remaining is, was the testing done by gas chromatography? Was it enzymatic testing? We don't know, and we'll never find out. We don't have reports to suggest that, or exactly what the validity of those tests were. So the initial result is suspect, and by extension, the extrapolation is also suspect. It bears pointing out, Your Honor, and this is the only sort of granular detail I want to get into, the extrapolation, according to the Commonwealth's expert, is somewhere between 0.13 and 0.29 blood alcohol concentration. That is a swing of more than 123%. In other words, the swing of the extrapolation is larger than any one of the numbers themselves, which means it simply cannot be reliable. It illustrates the invalidity of the underlying serum plasma test, and for those reasons, the defense objects to the admission of both the blood test, the underlying test, as well as the concomitant extrapolation.
Okay, thank you. Kamala?
(Clears throat) Your Honor, so what the Commonwealth would submit is this may have been a valid basis for a motion to suppress, but it was a motion to suppress that was never filed and one that the defendant specifically waived, that Mr. Yannetti waived all motions to suppress. As it pertains to Mr. Roberts from the Office of Alcohol Testing's testimony regarding the serum conversion and the retrograde extrapolation, the reason for the range is because it's math and essentially taking into account of the number of different variables. That is why the range is as it is. As it pertains to the specific item that would be introduced into evidence, meaning the defendant's medical records, that's what the Commonwealth is referring to as the records coming in. Mr. Roberts would come in and testify as to his own analysis, his mathematical calculations, and the results based on his training and experience, which the defendant has had for over 2 years, as Mr. Roberts testified at the grand jury to that exact set of scenarios. As it pertains to the testing itself, the Commonwealth, as indicated on its proposed final pretrial memorandum, has summoned in not only the doctor who ordered the testing, the registered nurse, the nurse practitioner, who would both have been involved in the taking of the sample from the defendant pursuant to her medical treatment and medical diagnoses, as well as the director of the lab at Good Samaritan Medical Center, who would testify as to what kind of testing is done and the nature of that testing and everything else. As it pertains to those witnesses, if the defendant wishes to conduct some sort of voir dire prior to the testimony in front of the jury, I certainly have no objection to that. But any sort of voir dire of Mr. Roberts or exclusion of his testimony would be inappropriate based on the fact that the defendant has had more than ample notice as to what the parameters of that testimony would be. So as far as what would be coming in as an exhibit, it would be the medical records with that amount in it, and there would be testimony from essentially anyone and everyone involved in the ordering, taking, and analyzing of that particular sample, which then provides the basis for Mr. Roberts' testimony.
Okay. So I have like one small paragraph from the Commonwealth on this. I want a memo on this.
Sure.
All right, so I'll take this under advisement.
EM-17, they're 17.
Yeah, they're 17, we still need to address some of. All right, so that's all of the defendant's motions in limine, correct, Mr. Yannetti?
Can we just have a moment?
Mr. Jackson, it's all of them, isn't it?
We filed a motion for attorney-conducted panel voir dire.
Yeah, that's a joint motion, and that's, I already said, we're going to talk about impanelment this afternoon.
Just being complete in answer to the court's question. That was one that was not addressed, but that's fine.
All right. Oh, the request just to have panel, your motion was a little bit confusing.
Right.
So you want panel voir dire?
Panel voir dire, correct.
I'm not going to do panel voir dire in this case. So we'll talk about the particulars of it later this afternoon. All right, so on the Commonwealth's list of motions, you said that there are some that you may agree with. What besides the view? Are there any of these numbers?
Yes, Your Honor. The defense does not object to the Commonwealth's motions in limine numbers 1 through 6. Number
right,
8.
1 through 6.
Yes, number 8. Number 9. Number 11, we obviously joined in that request.
Yes.
Let's see. Number 14, we do not object to. Number 15, we have no objection in principle, but we do reserve the right to object to just individual exhibits as they come.
Yep.
Number 18, we have no objection. Number 19, we have no objection. Number 23, no objection. Number 26, no objection. I believe
that's,
the court
that's the one we addressed,
that.
Yeah.
And number 32, we have no objection.
All right, thank you. All right, Mr. Lally, I will hear you on our paper 297, your number 7.
Okay. So, Your Honor, this is the Commonwealth's motion to preclude reference and redact the manner of death contained on the victim's death certificate. This is a routine motion the Commonwealth files in really respect to any case. Manner of death.
That's not persuasive, so go ahead.
No. Manner of death, as elucidated in the motion, is not something that is typically something that is permissible to be testified to from anybody to the jury, because that's sort of the question of liability ultimately that is left to their discretion as far as how they find the facts. But cause of death obviously is something that is a medical determination. Manner of death, as the court is well aware, is there are essentially three or four different selections, and they fall into different categories. They don't necessarily mean in the medical context what they might mean in the legal context. So for that just sort of simple differentiation of meaning between the two, manner of death is not something that the Commonwealth feels is appropriate for the court, for any witness to be testifying to as far as the jury is concerned, as that's a question for them ultimately to determine. And for those reasons, the Commonwealth would ask that this motion be allowed.
All right, who's responding to this?
Thank you, Your Honor. The medical examiner who completed the death certificate in this case concluded that the manner of death was undetermined. The Commonwealth now seeks to have that portion of the death certificate redacted because it is quite clearly exculpatory. All of the cases cited by the Commonwealth deal with the issue of whether it was error for the Commonwealth to admit a death certificate listing the manner of death as a homicide because it violates a defendant's right to due process and a fair trial under the 5th, 16th, and 14th Amendments to the United States Constitutions. None of the cases cited by the Commonwealth stand for the proposition that a medical examiner's determination that the manner of death is undetermined should be redacted. In fact, the Commonwealth cites Commonwealth versus Ellis at 373 Mass 1, it's a 1977 case, for the proposition that excluding the word undetermined is the better and safer course. But that's a misstatement of the law, and I would urge the court to read the Supreme Judicial Court's opinion in that case. What it actually says is this, quote, "Nothing contained in the record of a death which has reference to the question of liability for causing death shall be admissible in evidence. The better and safer course is to exclude from a death certificate the words homicide, suicide, or accident in a criminal trial." Notably missing from that list of words that the Supreme Judicial Court warned about is the word undetermined. That is what the Commonwealth seeks to have redacted here. The Commonwealth bears the burden of proof in this case. They have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that a homicide occurred, and their own medical examiner has opined that she was unable to make that determination. That finding is relevant, it's exculpatory, and there's no authority that supports its redaction. Thank you.
All right. Ms. Delally, the medical examiner will be on your witness list, right? I haven't seen either of your witness list.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. So I'll take this under advisement. All right, Ms. Delally, you're number 10, our number 300.
Yes, Your Honor. In this motion, the Commonwealth is simply seeking to obtain Corey information or records of potential jurors. I'm not looking for information pertaining to jurors that as they come in or some voluminous amount of every possible potential juror, but only seated jurors. And essentially, what the Commonwealth is requesting is to simply have some sort of verification that the answers that are provided by the jurors are true and accurate. This is something that is permitted by the case law, it's permitted by the statute, and it's obviously something that the Commonwealth would share with the defense as required to, but the timing of it, of what I'm asking for and the limited scope that I'm asking for in relation to just seated jurors, once we have a full sort of set of jurors, whether that be 12, 16, whatever the court chooses as far as the number, I'm assuming approximately 16 or so. But once those are seated, the Commonwealth is just asking for some time to run those queries and provide those to counsel and then make any further objections for cause prior to the jury being sworn.
Okay. So I know you're not in agreement. Are you opposing this?
Yes, Your Honor. Your Honor, we object for several reasons. First, the jurors are given a questionnaire which specifically asks this question. They self-report. We rely on self-reporting from jurors with regard to all questions. The Commonwealth has cherry-picked this one question to verify whether or not they're telling the truth without dealing with any of the other questions that the jurors are asked. This proceeding right now, like many of these proceedings, is being broadcast widely, publicly. There are potential jurors out now listening to this, I'm sure, waiting for an answer from the court as to whether or not they will undergo that further invasion of privacy. And they are also, I would submit, aware that in this unusual case, the Commonwealth, through their special prosecutor, has sought to charge picketers, protesters in a very unusual manner. We would claim a harassing manner. And our position is that this is just another method of harassment. We believe it's unfair. We ask the court to deny this motion.
Do you have any case law to support your argument, Mr. Iannetti?
Your Honor, the case law is simply the constitutional rights to privacy that the jurors have. I mean, this is, it's an issue of fairness, Judge. So that's what we're relying on.
All right. So the motion is allowed, Mr. Clerk, number 300.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Lally, you're coming into number 12 with me quite skeptical. Number 12, leading questions for 13 and 16-year-olds.
And again, Your Honor, let me just first start by saying I don't think that this is something that's going to be absolutely necessary, given what I know of the two child witnesses in this case. Only filing under abundance of caution, more so should the need arise based on less so the age of the child, but the age of the child taken in conjunction or in the context of sort of the atmosphere of testifying specifically in this case, in this courtroom, with different things going on as far as the amount of people and things of that nature. So I don't foresee this being an issue, but just an issue that I wanted to flag for the court. Should it become an issue and seek sort of the court's ruling or permission in regard to it prior to any sort of incident arising.
Okay, given that caveat, is there any objection?
No objection at this point, Your Honor. We can address it as it arises.
Okay. Mr. Lally, keep in mind the jurors would much rather hear from the witnesses than from the Commonwealth.
Of course.
All right. Mr. Clerk, on that, we're just going to withhold ruling. Withhold ruling until a later time. Commonwealth, you'll raise this again if need be.
Yes, sir.
All right. All right, so on your next motion, your number 13, I had it, I don't have it in order, just give me a minute. So I'm curious, do you happen to have, oh, we don't have the screen up. Do you have it? I'd like to see exactly what it is that you intend to introduce. So this is your motion in limine to admit evidence that the defendant was in custody for a period of time after her arrest. Jim, is it possible for you to print that for me?
13.
Yes, please. Thank you. Okay. All right. I'll hear you on this, Mr. Lally. And remind me the date that this body cam footage was taken.
Sure. So, Your Honor, this is in reference to the defendant's arrest post-indictment by the grand jury in this case. So it's June 9th, 2022.
So that's why I have not seen the video itself.
Correct. And that's certainly something that the Commonwealth can provide for the court. But essentially, when she's arrested and during the booking process at the Milton State Police Barracks, the troopers who conducted that arrest were wearing a body-worn camera pursuant to their BWC policy with the state police. Council has a copy of the policy, council has a copy of the video, and essentially there are a number of different statements which provide sort of third, fourth, fifth, sixth, I'm not sure what number we're up to at this point, of sort of varying accounts that the defendant has provided to numerous
people. Can you give
me
an idea now? Do you know the substance?
So the substance of these particular statements is the defendant, Ms. Reed, continuously is told by Sergeant Buchanan to essentially stop talking. He's advised her of a Miranda and advised her to stop making statements and repeatedly states that to her during the course of her making statements. But the sum and substance of it is she says something to the effect of, you know, are you in on the joke? And then makes some sort of reference to having witnessed Brian Albert and Colin Albert essentially smash John O'Keefe's head into the taillight, indicating that that's how her taillight was broken. Doesn't make any sort of further statements about why she would then leave the scene after that occurred or anything like that. But these are, again, different accounts that have been made in direct variance to prior statements that she made January 29th to the troopers, to paramedics, to treating medical professionals, to Ms. Roberts, to Ms. McCabe, to the niece of Mr. O'Keefe, to a whole other sort of slew and variety of people with a different sort of variation on what transpired each time. So it's sort of inextricably intertwined with the fact that she's in custody.
How so? Is she in handcuffs? Is she in a
she's
cell?
She's seated at the booking desk or the booking rail in the state police barracks. So, I don't need to make direct reference to it. It's just, again, it's something out of an abundance of caution based on sort of where it is and when it is that the statements are made that it may naturally sort of come out as far as it, if the court wishes. I think it's something that the court can cure by issuing a curative instruction if there's any prejudice to be suffered by the defendant. But again, it is a statement by the defendant, which is admissible, as the court is well aware. And then it is sort of in the confines or in the context of her being in custody when she makes that statement. I certainly wouldn't be trying to elicit testimony that she was in custody, but it is kind of apparent that she is.
Can you have that here for this afternoon?
Yes, I can arrange for that.
So we can see it?
Sure.
All right, what's the defendant's position here?
We object. Your Honor, we're in a situation now where the Commonwealth arrested Ms. Reed twice when they didn't have to. I made the argument to you at arraignment back in June of 2022 that after John O'Keefe was found dead on the lawn of Brian Albert's home, I immediately got a letter out to the state police saying, I represent her. I will surrender her. No need to arrest her. Just call me and I'll bring her in. They ignored that and they arrested her to get her into custody. I would assert ultimately to make the arguments that Mr. Lally's making today. Then, astonishingly to me, after the grand jury issued indictments, based on basically no new evidence, they upcharged her and once again did not contact me, despite the fact that she was completely in compliance with the terms of her release and had made every court appearance. They arrested her again. And so, again, I would assert to be in the position that they are in today. With regard to the case that they cited, Your Honor, Hoffer does not stand for the proposition that they claim that it does. In fact, the issue of that defendant being taken into custody was stricken by the court. The testimony in that case that was allowed or sanctioned by the SJC was evidence that the defendant had been living with his girlfriend but had unexplained absences. He didn't get along with her son. She was afraid of him, and that he associated with a convict that made her nervous. There was nothing about him being in custody that was admitted in that case. To the extent that these statements are, or the court deems these statements to be relevant and admissible, there are other ways to do it. I do urge the court to watch the video.
Yeah, I think we'll put it on the screen because I want to see how the jury would look at it.
Okay, that's fine. But I will suggest, Your Honor, that there are other ways to accomplish that, you know, either to have testimony about what it was, or, failing that, to have the audio of my client making whatever statements they seek to introduce without the video. An image of my client, you know, in handcuffs at a police station is what this court generally tries to avoid, given the fact that as she sits here and as this trial is ongoing, she's presumed to be innocent. We wouldn't bring her up here in an orange jumpsuit and then ask the jury to make decisions about her, nor should we display her you know, after a perp walk at the police station in handcuffs, making these statements.
All right. So I need the Commonwealth to, do you have your media person available, Ms. Gilman or Ms. Crawford or whomever?
Yes. All right. We're seeking to make arrangements for that.
All right. We'll put it on the screen just so I can see how the jury would see it. All right. Thank you. So that's, we'll look at that this afternoon. All right, so I'll hear you on the Cellebrite motion, your motion number 16, Mr. Lally.
Thank you, Your Honor. So in this motion, what the Commonwealth is requesting is for permission for the Cellebrite expert, Mr. Whiffen, to conduct a demonstration in the courtroom during the course of his testimony in regard to the examination that he did in regard to Ms. McCabe's extraction report, and specifically the alleged search, which the defendant purports occurred at 2:27 in the morning, and the Commonwealth maintains occurred at 6:23 and 6:24.
I want to stop you because one question is, how long will this take if we allow it? How long will the demonstration take?
So really what I'm seeking to do ideally would be for sort of a live demonstration, which I had Mr. Whiffen do and record, and provided a copy of that to counsel as well. So that recording that I provided has no audio to it, but there was also a PowerPoint presentation that Mr. Whiffen prepared in relation to the same issue that he produced, and then I provided that to counsel as well, which essentially goes through what he did, and it also.
You're not looking to do a PowerPoint presentation, are you?
No. The PowerPoint presentation would not be something I'd be looking to admit. The reason I did the video is in the event that technology is not our friend on that particular day and the live demonstration doesn't work, I would then be seeking to introduce the video and have him talk about it while it's playing. It mirrors essentially or exactly what Mr. Whiffen had included in his report, which was done back in almost a year ago at this point and has been provided to counsel, and is essentially the same thing as what's contained in his report, but just as far as a visual aid and demonstration for the jury. I just think it's a bit with when particularly talking about sort of the technical aspects of his particular analysis, the Commonwealth would submit that it would be helpful and assistive to the jury in order for them to have that sort of visual demonstration to go along with obviously the oral testimony of the witness as well.
All right, who's arguing this for the defendant?
Thank you, Your Honor. We received from the Commonwealth the video that Mr. Lally just described about 48 hours ago. So we have not had an opportunity to confer with our expert about that particular issue.
Okay.
However, just from sort of a cursory review, it does appear that its admission is improper. As the Commonwealth acknowledges in its motion, in order for the court to allow a courtroom experiment or reenactment, there are very strict rules concerning that experiment. It has to replicate with exactitude the actual event so that it is fair and informative for the jury. Otherwise, it's prejudicial and would serve only to confuse the jurors. Here, just based on a cursory review, it does not appear that Mr. Wiffen's in-court experiment replicates all of the factors that we know were in existence at the time in question.
Does it replicate the factors that he says he considered?
So I'll need to have a little additional time if the court doesn't mind to confer with my expert.
So I will give you time to confer with your expert and file a written response. But that's one of the factors that I'm asking you to look into.
Understood. And then just if the court does intend after a written briefing to consider admitting that evidence, we would ask to be able to take their expert on voir dire as to that particular issue.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. How much time, Ms. Little, do you think you'd need to confer with your expert and put something in writing?
I believe about a week should be sufficient, Your Honor.
Okay.
Thank you.
And I'm sorry, I neglected to answer the court's question as far as timing. The video demonstration, which is essentially what I'd be asking him to do, is about 19, 20 minutes.
Okay. All right. So, Mr. Clerk, that's under advisement. So, what remains on Commonwealth's motion 17? The statement, so so I know this also went, this went to the blood draw, but there were statements. That's what separates this from the defense motion to exclude the testing. So I'll hear you on that.
Sure.
Is the defense objecting to that portion of the Commonwealth's motion?
Thank you for that opportunity. Not particularly, no. It's the blood draw and the extraction.
Yeah, so the motion had both. So that's why, all right. So I guess we don't need to hear. So the part of your motion that concerns the statements made by the defendant, the defense is not objecting to?
No, very obviously, they're admissions. I mean, everybody knows what the rules are dealing with admissions. So I'm not concerned about that.
Okay. All right, so Jim, on 307, it's a split. The Commonwealth is permitted to introduce statements made for purposes of medical treatment. And the certified medical records. But there's an objection as to what we've heard regarding the alcohol testing, the blood testing for alcohol. Okay.
Okay.
All right. You're number 20, Mr. Lally. Our number
20, Your Honor, I believe, refers back to the same argument that the Commonwealth had made in opposition to the defendant's motion to exclude anything about the nature of the relationship.
Okay.
Things of that.
That's why I don't have it right here. Okay. 21, the out-of-court statements regarding the victim's state of mind.
So 21 sort of pertains to that same issue as 20. So essentially it's the same argument. You're on the same facts underlying it as far as statements that the victim, Mr. O'Keefe, made
but,
to...
But were you making statements regarding like Bins in those cases, Commonwealth versus Bins, the state of mind of state of mind of the victim, the defendant knowing it, the defendant being able to act as a result specifically?
Okay. So on that sort of specific application of, and that's why we filed two separate motions
right.
in relation to it, but as it applies to that, the Commonwealth would submit it as clearly met its burden under the case law as it applies to that because of the nature of some of those communications. So it's not just communications that are observed by other parties as far as what the victim, Mr. O'Keefe, indicated to Ms. Reed, or these aren't situations like in some of the case law where it's an indication to a third party and the defendant wasn't present, and then there's sort of an inference that can be made that, well, if they're saying it to this friend of theirs, then they must have communicated that to the person with whom they were in the relationship with. In this instance, Your Honor, we have direct communication between Mr. O'Keefe and Ms. Reed via text communications from each of their phones indicating that that communication about ending the relationship was made just prior to the date of his death in this particular case. So it not only enhances what I would submit is corroborates that testimony from other sources or from other family members and other witnesses. So for those reasons, the Commonwealth that would ask that this motion be allowed.
All right.
Your Honor, on this motion, our position is that we'd like more specificity about which statements the Commonwealth is indicating they seek to admit. I imagine
that's the same thing I said to you, Mr. Lally, on the other one that was
right
in connection with this. So right. The Commonwealth will do that?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
And I think then at that point we can evaluate it, Your Honor. Certainly some of these statements are going to come in. But we'd like the opportunity to be able to object if they...
I agree, so it has to be clearer. So, you know, as far as your notice to the defense, you can even point to grand jury minutes or whatever, but I need to know the statements you intend to introduce.
Understood, Your Honor. And what I can do and what I aim to do just sort of an ancillary thing is I'd like to... if the court is amenable and counsel is amenable to pre-mark as many exhibits as possible, just to make the situation easier for both sides as far as referencing documents, photographs, videos, things of that nature. So when it comes to, I'm not seeking to introduce, when it comes to any sort of the cell phone extractions, I'm certainly not opposed to admitting the entire extraction or dump essentially from anybody's individual phone. But what I'd like to do as far as exhibits are concerned is to print out or create sort of extraction reports from those cell phones as far as different communications between person A, person B, just to make it more simple for the jury to digest it and more simple for, I think, everyone involved to understand sort of the exact communications that we intend to talk about. So in that vein as well, what I can do is provide a supplemental memorandum in regard to 20 and 21, referencing sort of those specific conversations.
Okay. That'd be great. And if you can work together, and this will be part of the housekeeping we talk about this afternoon, work together to pre-mark exhibits, that would be great. All right, so 22.
So again, with respect to 22, and I think the same can probably be said for 23 and 24 and 25, is that essentially, as I've stated earlier, the Commonwealth is somewhat operating in the dark, and that I don't have any discovery, I don't have a witness list, I don't have any investigator reports or notes or notice of an expert or notice of any sort of expert reports, curriculum vitae, really anything. So out of an abundance of caution, the Commonwealth filed motion to eliminate numbered as 22, which is in reference to any alleged bad character or any prior misconduct of the victim or any witness that the defendant alleges to seek to elicit through whatever witnesses they may or may not have. But essentially, what I would state in regard to this specific issue is that, as the court is well aware, it has to be something that is, first of all, relevant to anything, and it also has to be relevant to a reputation and not just an anecdotal something that's brought up from one witness, again, who I don't even know who those witnesses would be at this time. So I don't know that the court can rule on it without any sort of notice as to whether or not the defendant intends to seek to introduce such evidence or has any such evidence or who those witnesses would be or what their level of knowledge would be. But it's something that I at least wanted to flag for the court in regard to if it comes up as we go along.
More raw courtroom coverage of the trial of Karen Reed is coming up from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Press subscribe so you don't miss a minute.